Yep.
All right. Can you flip back over to the PowerPoints?
The PowerPoints, I'm flipping over to. Do you want a clicker?
You can be the clicker.
I can't handle a clicker. I can install Windows, but I can't handle
There is an
a clicker.
enter key on that keyboard.
Oh,
use it.
Thank you. I can use an enter key or a key
One
down.
More, please.
Yeah, one more. Okay,
yeah.
There you go. I'm done.
We have a quite interesting story about this session because we have been running this session for quite many years as an interactive session. And this year they wanted to do us as a breakout. But this is really a session where we have scanned through the forums to see common issues that, you know, deployment people run into. And of course we will demo their workarounds and fixes and why they may appear. But the most important part is that we start these sessions by gathering, by building an agenda together. Trust me, we have issues that we can highlight if you can't come up with them. But we wanted to you to give us or have the first pitch to a question or bring us questions to answer in the sessions. We have prepared a bunch of demo machines. We can demo every deployment thing related to at least Microsoft deployment technologies on these laptops.
Yep.
So that means what we would like to do is start getting some feedback in from you. Anything related to deployment that you want to know more about. An issue you had, just something you want to have clarified, something new you heard about that you really didn't haven't seen before. Just raise your hand and yell out a question. Yes, sir, in back. Can you do that?
I'm the notepad guy, yes.
You're the notepad guy.
I'm the notepad guy. Intel.
Shall we switch over to the notepad guy?
Yeah, we can do that.
Are you number 3, 2?
Nope.
That's me. Then you are 4.
Yep.
Notepad guy is number 4.
Yep.
Number 4.
It was the Intel video graphic adapter.
Driver.
Video drivers in general or Intel video drivers in particular? Yeah. Intel, all right. Okay. More questions. Yes, sir. Are you in Windows 7 or XP? So storage injection Windows 7.
Okay,
as you
okay.
do it.
Storage.
With. Yeah.
If you
check. Got it? Yes, sir. Mount custom VHDs. Okay. Mount custom VHDs in Windows 8. Are you meaning like mount, like just getting the content, or are you talking about offline servicing with this one? All right, well, I think we can leave the line as is. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. Okay, so the question is starting deployment.
Why is that different from 2007?
Okay.
Run a task sequence from
Software Center. Takes a long time.
Oh,
why?
You mean the App Center?
No. Software Center.
Yeah. App Store?
No, not that either.
Just checking.
Not the software catalog, no, nothing else. All right, you, sir.
Deploying server OSs with unsigned NIC
drivers. with unsigned NIC drivers. Okay.
Was it
that one with storage was network.
Network.
Close enough. We need them both.
Yeah.
It's difficult to do deployment without network and storage. Yes, sir. USB for media deployment. Okay.
Oh.
All right, you, sir, in the green. Updates in reference image. Yep, pretty much. Yes. Apply GPO packs in sequence. I took the liberty to rephrase it. Yes, Rhonda? Okay, ooh. Encrypt content on.
Thank you.
on drive. Fair enough.
Something like that.
I think I actually have a quite good starting point here. So we will start working through these questions, and if there are time over for more questions, we'll simply just bring them in. So do you want to start on the Intel video driver thing?
The Intel video driver. Since I don't have any issues with the Intel video driver, I need to know what kind of issues do you have?
My issue is that I have several generations of hardware, and so the oldest hardware needs an old driver.
Ah!
That driver still supports the new hardware,
yeah.
But the new driver, but that doesn't support the old one.
So
yeah.
So if I can rephrase that question, how can I make sure that the deployment solution can handle multiple versions of a driver? Because sometimes that's simply the fact. Vendors create new versions of a driver where they will drop support for older devices. So that's life, and we need to deal with it. Are you using LightTouch or are you using Config Manager?
LightTouch.
LightTouch, it's yours.
Thank you. Make sure that the correct hardware gets the correct driver. Yeah, so there are, did you went to the driver session?
Unfortunately, no.
Okay. So the problem is that Johan described. It doesn't really matter what we do. Vendors are dropping support and they are adding support, and they're not really going to send you an email and say, hey, you know, we dropped the support. You're just going to realize that it doesn't work anymore. And there are basically two ways of dealing with drivers. One is the
right way.
Yeah, and the other one is the not so correct way. We normally talk about the total chaos or the total control. And if I want to deploy, if I need to deploy a bunch of machines, and I'm not really responsible for this. I'm just a consultant. I'm going in. I'm going to deploy 4,000 machines, and I'm getting as fast as I can to another customer. In that case, I can do the total chaos. But as a customer, when you want to keep a solution for many years to come, you need to realize that you're going to run multiple vendors, most likely, with versions and operating system, so you really need to deal with that. And the default setting from Microsoft is, we trust in plug and play. And they are the only ones. Because the rest of us don't really believe in that. The problem you have is this.
Can't you just demo it instead?
Yes, I can do that, but I was thinking of picking up why it actually has the small issue of... I'm going to do that while I'm waiting for that. So here's the solution. You need to take control over drivers and make sure that everything is correctly installed. By default, it's plug and play. And I'm firing up MDT. It takes a couple of seconds. It's a really huge business application.
It's an MMC, that's why.
Yeah, it's a business application. And now it's loading drivers. So if you look at this, it looks kind of organized. I have one folder, which is logical folders, not physical, logical folder per operating system. And if we open up Windows 7, you're going to realize that I have one folder for that particular model. Okay, so that's number one, to organize driver based on make or model, make model or version of the operating system and architecture.
And in this way, you can have those different versions in different model folders.
Yes. So the next step is, of course, to verify that you have, and I need to change this, sorry. We need to have different colors on the screen text, geeky color, and we also need to have a larger font size. What about that? Works.
Is it difficult for you?
Yes, I need to go to the screen background, make it very geeky. So number one is WMIC, CS product get name. And that is the model that will be a variable in within side MDT, which means that I can use this. And that's why I created a folder with the exact same name as the model name. And that means in the end, when we switch back to the virtual machine itself here, if I go into my task sequence for a Windows 7 machine, this is slightly modified. Not that much, but just slightly. Here is the pre-install step. The pre-install step is actually the step that injects all the drivers. Or should we say, copy the drivers down to the operating system. So by modifying this step to say, don't include any drivers and all of them, which makes perfectly sense.
What this really means is disable plug and play. Don't trust plug and play anymore. That second radio button there means disable plug and play. It's
correct.
Just a strange label.
So if we add nothing to the following path, you're going to realize it's going to pick Windows 7 folder, which I have, and then it's going to translate percent model percent into whatever machine you have, right? Which means that it's going to copy those drivers down. So as long as you have the correct driver in that folder, those drivers will be the only driver the plug-and-play detection have the capability of running through. So what's going to happen next is something called ranking. And here's the... I did a blog post on this. And it's very simple. Windows is using something called ranking, where they try to figure out which driver is the best driver, and that is based on ranking.
And in this case, since we're using only the drivers in a given folder, normally there will be little drivers to select from.
Yeah. So by only providing the actual driver that Windows is supposed to use, Windows is going to pick the only driver it can find. So plug and play kind of works now because it has nothing to choose between you choosing it. So this is the only way we figure out to do deployment in a long run when you keep your system. If it's for a short while, it doesn't really matter. If you have a few models, it doesn't really matter. If you're going to change the hardware constantly on a 2 year basis and you only have one vendor, it doesn't really matter. But most companies stretch over time, and then you need to really take care about this. There's different combinations. You can check the recording from yesterday when Johan and Michael talked about this. But this is the basic idea of it, making sure that Windows only can pick one. In that case, it's pretty great.
Nice question.
Yeah, I'm on the way, I'm working on it. New. So, network inject deployment Windows 7 works.
All right, so some clarification. Is that for the boot image or is it for the actual operating system? Okay.
Wow.
Change the screen.
I'm changing. Number two?
Two.
Number
two. Are you using Light Touch or Zero Touch? Light Touch.
So here's the thing. When you deploy with MDT Light Touch, and this is also valid for Config Manager, and it's very black.
Yep.
Why did you do that? That was mean. Three things are happening. First, the sequence, one way or another, depending on your deployment settings, as Michael told you, we'll figure out what drivers that are going to be used. And if we're using the control freak method that Mike showed you by using folders and such, it will only be the drivers in that folder that is going to be considered. And actually, those drivers will be copied to the C drive. Then a bit later, that script that Michael showed you will kick in and actually stage the driver into the store. And if you look in the setup log files, you can actually see it's the DSM component that is launched by the setup to do this job. And then eventually, setup will install it. It will install the drivers. So when troubleshooting this, I mean, is there any point of troubleshooting these two steps if the driver is never copied locally? Well, of course not. The driver will never be there. So you can actually check the BDD log file, or you can go directly into the CDI drivers log file to see information about this, but you can simply look on the drive. Search for it. Is the driver file that you are testing with, is it available? That's the first thing. The second thing, all right, how would we troubleshoot if the driver is not staged correctly? It could be because we have too little scratch space in our boot image. For example, not network drivers, but video drivers, they can be quite large. NVIDIA could be 80 gigs. And the staging process is using scratch space in WinP to unpack the driver. And the default scratch space is 32. And you really don't have to go to Harvard to realize it's difficult to fit an 80 meg driver into a 32 meg buffer. So that could be an issue as well, but it's probably not that when you have a NIC driver. So we can troubleshoot that by simply looking in a DSM log file to see, okay, why didn't it do what it was supposed to do? There is also another log file from the component-based servicing stack, the cbs.log file, and you can actually see some information as well in the core setup log file, setup-act.log in MDT. So these guys can give you a clue why wasn't it staged correctly. And then, as Michael showed you, if it anyway doesn't for some reason install it, you can check this log file, and it will tell you why it didn't install. But you will have to go through these steps to see where it failed, why it wasn't injected. Because as you find out, you could clearly get it injected when you run this manually. So why didn't it do it when MDT did the exact same operation? So that's how we troubleshoot it. Did you have a comment over there, sir?
Yeah, well, step one says passing with copies of the driver to C. Is that something that you set up in the task sequence, or does it automatically copy it to C?
So the question is, the first step, does it happen automatically? Yes, it does. And that's valid for config manager, and that's value. It's for light touch as well.
Does it
erase the drivers after, depending on the OS? If it's XP, well, it keeps them for a while. If it's Windows 7, it deletes them. But you will still see that in the log file.
There is a strange error you can have, especially when you do XP to Windows 7, and that is in some of the OEM cases. They already have that folder. The folder name is drivers, which means that if I do a refresh on an XP, and that machine is running XP, it might have XP drivers in that folder. And MDT doesn't erase that folder. It will instead copy all the new drivers. Then you have a folder with both XP drivers and Windows 7 drivers. And you might think that Plug and Play is going to pick the Windows 7 drivers?
Not really.
It might. But it also might pick the XP drivers. So we do have a lot of customers having a problem with Intel SATA drivers. And for some reason, Windows say that, you know, this Intel SATA 4.0 driver isn't really a 64-bit driver. And then you try to figure out, where in heck did that driver come from? And you can't find it on the network. But if you open the local C drive and check the drivers folder, it's in there.
Excellent. I hope that answered the question. Next one.
Yeah, I'm working on it. We need to switch. I'm number four.
You are four?
Mount custom VHD in Windows 8. You were talking about an issue and you mount a VHD file in Windows 8. And what happens then? If it's locked.
So how did you lock the VHD?
But the problem is that if you lock the drive, you mount it, but when you lock the drive, you can't mount it to be able to read it anyway, because Windows needs to be able to modify or do something on that drive anyhow. So it doesn't really matter, and that's the same back in Windows 7. So that hasn't changed. If you do mount the VHD drive, or VHD file, it will be modified.
I mean, a VHD device is actually, that file is actually a block level device, and it appears and works like a block level device, like a hard drive. So if you mount it, you can still mount it read only. That's fine, and then you won't be able to write to it. But if you do write it for, or sorry, if you do open it for read and write, you will be able to change data on that VHD file. It's just a container.
Yeah, you can open it for read, but if you do that, you cannot read the content of the drive.
You can certainly read the content of the drive if you open it for read only.
If you open it for read only, it will not have a drive letter. And the only way to give it a drive letter is to write on the disk itself, because it's not a removable media. If it was a removable media, that would be possible, but a VHD file is not mounted as a read only, as a removable media. It's mounted as a hard drive, which means that it behaves exactly as a hard drive. So if I take any kind of hard drive and inject that to any kind of machine, it will be written on. There, as far as I know, there's no way to work around that. That's the behavior of how hard drive works in Windows. So I can't figure out any way to fix that. I can check with friends, because I had the same issue and I couldn't solve it in any way. If I need to access the drive in any way, it needs to write on it. Since it's the file system is running NTFS, it's going to modify the file system anyhow, which is a problem for us when we do security-related operations on computers that we are not supposed to touch. So the only way we figured out to do it as far as now is that if we do have a physical machine and we need to do any kind of work on that machine, we duplicate the disk using DDCopy from WinPE into a VHD file, mount the VHD file, then we search the VHD file. That way I don't touch the physical machine. So it's not really possible to access it in that way. It's a read-only, and then it's read-only, and then you can't modify things on it.
All right.
Okay. Next one.
Running a sequence from Software Center. Well, in Config Manager 12, you have, and I can show you this if you do something.
Flip again.
If you have a client, this one here. Let's see if I have a... Yeah, this is a deployed sequence in Config Manager 12. They changed the name now in the releases. And I can, of course, run install from here and I can start installation. At this point, since CMO 12 now by default, if I check my deployment, has the following setting. If I go to my deployments for that sequence, it has the following. You cannot select anymore like you could in 07 to run directly from a DP, which was something you normally would like to do, because if you really had a good LAN, that was something that simply was quicker. So in CMO 12, it's simple as that. It takes a few more minutes longer to do deployments now because we're using download and execute in the process. And the more packages, I mean, if I go to a sequence and I go to references, I will see all the packages that this sequence needs. And as you can see, I have a driver package and I have a few other packages. The policies for them will need to be downloaded as well, and that will also take some time. But all in all, I don't know of any setting you can have to make that process quicker. What you can do, however, which is a really cool trick. I mean, if you deploy a sequence, say I take this sequence and I'm going to deploy it, and I will select the collection, you see you can only select, like in 07, you can only select the device collections. You cannot deploy a sequence to a user. But quite recently, there was on the MyIT Forum website, they published a PowerShell script that you can run on the client side that will start the deployment of a sequence. And that's a normal app. You just add an application with that PowerShell script and an application you can publish to a user. So now users can actually go in, even though it was not intended, into the software catalog in Config Manager. And if you have that app published, they can actually request, including approvals, to install that OS. So they, using a PowerShell as a sort of a middle tier, you can remove some of the limitations around executing sequences. But as far as times goes, well, the only if it's just because you have many packages, all right, you have to combine them, make fewer packages if that's the problem. I don't know of any way to speed up the process. Unless Microsoft is doing something now in the Service Pack 1 release that is upcoming. So I hope you answered the question there. All right, next one.
Yeah, I'm working on it. Next one is deploying server operating system with unsigned drivers. So before you start, you should never ever deploy server OS with unsigned drivers. You should never ever even use unsigned drivers. There's a reason it's not signed.
There is no excuse for using an unsigned driver. If you cannot find an unsigned driver with the vendor, or if you need to modify the driver so it becomes unsigned because you need to change a setting in it, which I can understand, sign it yourself. Create a certificate and sign it. Install that certificate as part of your image or as part of your deployment process. It takes you 5 minutes. And if you don't know how to do, there apparently are other idiots who have... Give me back my screen.
There's always someone that, you know...
There is always someone.
Yeah.
This is my blog, Deployment Research. The second entry is pretty well explains the problem. A step-by-step, this is how you do, this is how it looks when a driver is not signed, by the way, when you try to install it. But 5 easy steps. Get the tools from the SDK and the driver kit, create a certificate, create a catalog file from the driver folder, sign it and timestamp the driver, and get what? Install the certificate, and you're done.
What you should be aware of is that if you do this because of the reason of the INF file is incorrect, well, then you know the driver was signed by the vendor. So you only modify it because they was not really smart enough to type the correct thing in the INF file. In that case, it's fine. However, if the only way to find a driver for that particular hardware is to find an unsigned driver from the non-vendor's site, trust me, that is not a driver. That is something else.
So check for drivers on I mean, like Dell, Lenovo, HP, and such. If you can't find it there, check the vendor's vendor, meaning Broadcom, Intel. If you can't find it there, go to Microsoft catalog site. They have a copy of every driver that ever passed through the signing process to make a driver certified. They have 60, 70 gigs of drivers available on that catalog site that you can download as long as you know either the name or the plug-and-play ID number of it.
And it's kind of fun because the Windows Server, well, if you go back to Windows Server 2003, X64, that signing process for those drivers is basically the same we have today. So for XP, it's not the same to go back to XP, but on a server side, going back to 64-bit, 2003, those drivers normally work in 2008R2 and even in Windows 2012 because they have another driver model. It's the 32-bits that it's scary.
And 64-bit OSs these days, they required drivers to be signed, yeah. Period. All right, next question, if you flip back.
I'm the flipper. I changed my role to a flipper.
So USB for media deployment, was that Light Touch or was it Config Manager?
It's Light Touch. Okay. It's mine. So the issue is that depending on how the USB itself appears to the machine, it's either a USB key or it's a hard drive. Now, when it's a hard drive, it's kind of hard for the guys that do Microsoft Deployment Toolkit, the guys, for Michael Niehaus to figure out, since he's the only one in the team right now, to figure out if it's a drive or if it's a non-drive. So number one is depending on BIOS settings and how we should treat USB keys, hard drives or keys, that's one of the issues. The other issue is that it depends on what version you have of MDT. Because in MDT 2012, they fixed a massive amount of these small issues. In update one, they are fixing a bunch of them more. And the reason is because now they are enforced to handle it. They didn't really need to do that before, but now they need to be coping with the scenario of actually installing on a USB stick.
And here is the deal. USB hard drives are more likely to become disk number zero in a computer BIOS. And if that external USB hard drive becomes number zero, we normally run into problems with the deployment. But if you find a combination of your models that you have and external hard drives that doesn't become disk number zero, you can often deploy even from a USB hard drive.
Yep.
A USB stick, however, almost, not all the time, but almost never becomes disk number zero because the machines detect them as a removable device. It's not a full hard drive, but it can still happen. But simply, USB sticks is less likely to give you an issue than a USB hard drive.
Yeah.
So what, but it doesn't mean I cannot use hard drives, but I'm more likely to get issues with it.
Yes. So I focus always on using USB sticks, and if I can't fit it on a USB disk, I create multiple different media deployment shares, one for 32-bit, one for 64-bit, oh, you got it. So we can divide it in multiple sticks instead. A decent stick today is 32 gig, and that should fit
could
most.
Could you please create a media item in the workbench?
Yes, I can. Yep. And the only reason I can do
done
that...
Done a training on it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I attended one of your trainings.
That's good.
And you didn't tell me, so I need to figure it out myself. It's kind of easy. The only thing we do is that we go to advanced configuration and we do media, and we do media by new media, and we do a browse. And then we need to find some kind of hard drive.
The only thing you should remember when creating media, do not create the media folder inside your existing deployment share. It will freak it out completely. Separate folder in a separate level.
And then I'm actually going to pick the selection profile of nothing, and here's the reason why. I've seen customers doing it in two different ways, and I haven't made up my mind on which one is the better one. But what you can do is that you can either go into your applications and operating systems, and then you create a selection profile and say, well, you know, this selection profile is going to be, I'm going to create a folder first. This is one way of doing it. Let's say that we create, under operating system, we create a new folder called media001. Here's one way of doing it. And here we go in and say new folder media001. So I created just two folders. Then we create a selection folder profile called media001. And then I say that it should be that folder, sorry, not packages, task sequences. In this way, that selection profile points to two logical folders that doesn't contain anything. But what you can do now is, instead of creating a new folder structure, you just more or less say that, well, you know, I'm going to have the following operating system in that folder. You drag them into that folder. Since that is just a logical link, it doesn't consume any space. It's not really a copy. So this is one way. The other one is, of course, to create the actual folder structure and say this is the operating system that should be in, and so on. And in this case, I'm going to have the Windows 7 2, go to media001, and then we go to our media deployment share, right-click properties, and then we need to specify that, yes, I'm going to use the media001 selection profile. If I'm going to have a light touch, I'm going to use MDT 2012. I only need the 64-bit boot images.
You only need the 32-bit boot image.
Yes, that's correct. I'm just very bad at English, so that's correct. And then you defined Windows P, and the driver issue is 128. You select the features. And so you have a separate deployment share.
Can you show that folder, the content of it?
Absolutely. Right now, it's not that much in it.
I don't care.
You don't care?
No, I don't care. That deploy folder, a little-known feature in MDT, is that you can copy that folder to an existing hard drive. So you have C:\deploy. And then you can run the deployment from that one.
Yep.
So if you have a USB stick with the stuff, or a USB hard drive with the stuff, you can just attach it to a running machine, copy in the deploy folder, and then you can remove the USB stick and the USB hard drive. And then you can run the refresh of that machine. It's not an upgrade, it's a refresh, but you run it locally. So there is no other data copying going on. So as long as you, one way or another, even over the network, can copy this folder down, you can actually run the deployment fully offline as well. And that's using a combination of the network deployment solution and a media item.
So you could basically install Windows PE on your physical machine and copy the deploy folder to that and then run it from inside and jank the driver. And we also seen customers over and over creating the ISO image. It's like, what are you doing? I'm waiting for my ISO image. It takes an hour. Almost done. Over and over again. It's like, no, you don't really need to do that. Just copy the folder and go like, what? Can you just copy the folder? Yeah, you right-click, and then you select copy. And you just paste.
There is a training for that, isn't it?
Yes, we have a two-day training on that too.
Copy, X-copy, rich copy, robocopy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We cover the copy process, basically.
All right. More questions.
More questions. Yes.
Can I comment? Media
001? Yep.
Means absolutely nothing. In
the past,
did you
see
that?
Yeah.
Why did they change it, and will they change it back?
So the comment was, in the past, you were able to rename this media item.
So you can call it Win 7 32-bit.
So you can give it a useful name. Why can't we do that anymore? I have no idea, and I also have no idea if they will change that behavior.
Yeah. I think I asked Niehaus, and he was like, yeah. Yeah, I think they're using the name for a reference somewhere when they created. So it's the name is both an identity and a name.
I think it's because they're using PowerShell to do everything, and when they're referencing the deployment shares and the media is just the deployment share, they normally have this D0021 for a normal deployment share, and they have the media 001 for a media item. So that's the only thing I can come up with. But
so
I
edited the PowerShell command that creates this and gave it the name I want.
I don't know if that's possible to change the name of the PowerShell command, but try out and let me know.
It should work. I mean, I'm guessing the same thing. So if you check on any other item they have, they have an identity and they have the name, and the name is just a standalone name. But for deployment shares, it's not a standalone name. It's the name and the identity at the same time. So I guess that's the reason why. I'm just guessing.
Next question. So the comment was that you can or that you can't?
I know for a fact that you can with link deployment shares.
All right. So the comment was you actually can do this with link deployment shares, so it might be possible that we'll be able to do that with media as well. All right.
That's a nice blog post.
Very nice blog post. Exactly. Exactly. That's one of the cool things about the workbench. Everything we do, in the end of that wizard, there is a view script button that you can just copy and paste the code. All right, updates in ref images.
Who asked that question?
You, sir. Light Touch or Config Manager? Config. That means Light Touch.
Yep.
Now, I'm being rude.
Yes, you
we
are.
We almost every single time create config manager ref images in Light Touch. And the reason we recommend customers doing that is, it's sort of five reasons. One, it's much faster. Two, you get a very more flexible image. You can use it for any type of deployment solution. You can use it with Light Touch, Config Manager, SendWorks, Altiris, Windows Deployment Services, God forbid, ImageX manual stuff, and Config Manager, and VMM libraries, and VMware libraries. You can have the same reference image for everything. If you create the reference image in Config Manager, yeah, that's it. So when the server guys come, can you provide us with an image for our VMM solution? No. Sorry.
So here's a good question. Has anybody changed any kind of software from one vendor to another vendor the last 10 years in your environment?
No.
Oh, exactly. Sorry. So because we can see that. They built everything on Altiris. They built everything on Altiris. And now they need to build everything in Configuration Manager. So they're just doing everything once more. And it's like, why do you use... Now we're using Configuration Manager, so we need to do everything in Configuration Manager. Why don't you have a standalone solution for creating your reference images? Then you don't need to rebuild or reinvent the wheel every time someone with a political reason come and say, you need to run the following software. I prefer to have a standalone tool for this. And here's another reason. Copy profile. If you do want to have the copy profile function, which means that you would like to inherit settings that you did during the installation of the reference image, it needs to be installed with an account that has a profile. Configuration Manager doesn't use an account that has a profile. It installs everything under the system. So there is no profile, which means that things like branding and modifications to the end user's default profile can be done, but it's really hard to make it work. So that's why we do it in here. And patch management is actually another reason. In Configuration Manager, we do have in 2012, that's the version you're talking about, they do have the offline injection of patches, which is very nice. Anybody played with that, tried it, tested it? Works nice, right? Does it patch all the patches? So you still need to recreate your reference images anyway. Just not that often. So instead of doing it 10 times a year, maybe you can do it 9 times a year. or better, but you're going to need to recreate your reference images anyway. So that is why we do it in LightTouch. And the patch management process, well, there's two ways of patching them. The manual, very boring way, which means that you're going to download all the patches and put them in packages, inject the patches, and then install the reference image, and it will use these patches to inject them to the image. It's very boring. Trust me, I've tried that. The other way around is to use a WSUS server. Now, this becomes a small issue since there is a WSUS server on the network, which is consumed by the Configuration Manager server. So when you say, I need to have another WSUS server, someone will say, no, you're not allowed to have another server. We can only have one WSUS server. I'm not sure why, since it's pretty much free and only consumes about 40 gigs of drive. And 40 gigs of data today, is that very expensive, 40 gig? I wouldn't say it's very expensive. So in most cases, we install that WSUS server on the deployment server itself. I have a server that I use to create my reference images, and that is all going to be the WSUS server. And then you just specify in your rules file to use one. WSUS server equals http://the server. The server. Whatever name that is. And the trick with patching is that whenever we talk about this, customer goes and say, well, you know, the process we have to create the reference image is manual. We actually sit down in a couple of chairs around a TV, and then we build the reference image. It's so funny. It takes 4 hours to do that. We have popcorns and reference images. And that is the wrong way to create the reference images. Reference images should be created 100% fully automated. And so this, on this custom settings.ini file, it's close to be automated. It is fully automated if the virtual machine has the following MAC address, which means that I create a bunch of virtual machines, or I use PowerShell to create the virtual machines, power them up. They will then install Windows.
All the apps, if you have any.
All the apps, do the patching, sysprep, capture, and turn themselves off. Which means that all this huge process that everybody is talking about suddenly became something really boring. The only thing you need to do is to revert that machine, connect to that machine, and power it on.
And in 45 minutes, you will have a reference image. But can you give me that screen while we're waiting for that machine to boot?
There's your screen.
Of course, it's technically possible to create reference images inside Config Manager 2. And if you're creating really thick images, like for an education or a university style, it might make sense to actually do it in Config Manager, because otherwise you'll have to duplicate all those apps into LightTouch. But that's a rare exception. Our core base is we use LightTouch for most reference images. But in the reference image, there is a step. If I go edit on the sequence, there is a step that we actually will install software updates. Now, problem is the machines needs to be domain joined by default for this step to happen. And when I deploy a reference image, it's in workgroups. It's not joined to domain. So the client needs to find the management point one way or another. So what you can do to make that happen is to supply the SMS MP value here and the management point name, so actually can locate that DP. And of course, those updates needs to be deployed to the collection where you're deploying your VM. And by all means, use any type of virtual environment you like, Hyper-V or VMware, I don't care, as long as it's one of them. But do not create reference images on physical hardware, ever, never. It's simply not the best solution. A virtual machine is much better. Better image, less issues. And what you also have the option of doing is that you can actually, in Config Manager, you can create packages of updates, and you can have MDT inject them offline as well. And now they are being injected during the WMP phase rather than, I mean, the state restore down here is actually, we are live in Windows right now. We are running Windows. But if you do it using offline, it will be in the WMP phase and it will be much faster. You will actually save 4 or 5 reboots, making the process much quicker. The downside is you need to create those packages. The thing that we have in Config Manager that can reduce us, in Config Manager 12 that is, if I go to an image that I have, it's an already captured custom image from LightTouch. But what I can do here, if I have deployed updates, is I can right-click and I can say schedule updates. And if I do that, I will get a list now of patches available. And I can now schedule them to be injected offline on the server. Now, this, of course, only works with Windows updates. So if you have updates for Office, nah, sorry. Go back to building capture again. So that's why we always have these two processes. But by using this feature, we can maybe reduce the number of times that we have to create that reference image. If specifying the MP doesn't work, you might try to actually configure the good old Winds server if you still have it around and add in the site information in there like you did with SMS 2003 back in the days. And that can also help the client look at that management point. And the most common thing I see that prevents that from happening is related to boundaries. Because in Config Manager 012, if I go to my administration, I go to my discovery groups, discovery methods, we have the Active Directory Forest Discovery, and that discovery method will detect both AD sites, but also IP range boundaries. And a workgroup deployment doesn't really get AD sites, because it's in a workgroup, obviously. So when you have your boundaries, make sure that you also have the IP address range. We don't use subnets ever, never. Not even in previous versions you should do that. But then you create your boundary groups where you assign content to machines. And I mean, updates is just content like any other package. Make sure you add in that boundary into that group. Otherwise, the client can't find it. And you will have a software updates action that says downloading 0 of, and it just hangs for about 2 hours until it times out and continues. So that's a long answer to a short question.
So if we flip back, I haven't touched the keyboard so far. I schedule my creation of my reference images on a weekly basis. And I know that is insane, so you shouldn't do that. And there's only one reason. Building labs. I would like to be patched. I hate to have building labs and I need to run Windows Update each and every time to spend 2 and 3, 4 hours on 10 machines to get them patched and done to be able to do demos. So I do it more often than needed. For the most companies I have, we do it 4 times a year.
All right. Next question.
Next question? We did have another question.
Apply GPO packs. All right.
Who asked that? Someone?
Give me the.
Is it for LightTouch or for LightTouch? Okay. Yep. It is.
So here's the deal. LightTouch and Config Manager, both of them, supports something called group policy packs now. So if I go into a LightTouch sequence and check one of my Windows 7 sequences, in the very end of it, you will see apply local GPO package, which is new, and that's also, as I said, available in the Config Manager 2012 sequence too. This process applies a group policy package, and included in MDT, there are 4 of them built in. So if you go into the templates folder, you will find the GPO packs, and you will see that you have one for Service Pack 1, Windows 7, one, God forbid, you're deploying Vista, and you have one for Server 2008 R2 SP1. But only for those operating systems, meaning if you deploy Windows 7 RTM, you don't get the policy. Now, There is a tool that you can download called the Compliance Manager. It allows you to download ready-made baselines for security settings. And you can customize them, you can duplicate them and customize the copy. And when you're done with the changes in your policy, you simply go ahead and export them out to a group policy backup. And that backup, I can add a few files to, and yeah, it's the files that are in here. And then I have a GPO package. And I can create a new one in here, and I can call it something. My happy GPO package. And I'm assuming now I copied my export into this folder. And I can simply specify a rule in the settings file to say to MDT, go ahead and use this package instead. This is a GPO package path.
If you pop up the Security Compliance Manager again.
Yes, sir.
Yes. So in the right top corner, there is an import, which means that if you want to know what they have done, the settings they have, you just open it up. You might want to modify some of these settings, and then you save it in the same location. So that's an easy one to do if you don't want to create something from scratch. They are using what used to be called Enterprise Security blah, blah standard, which is the standard they assume that every corporate company will have. That's what they have as a default.
So if you have MDT 2010 today and you upgrade to 2012 and suddenly you cannot access Linux boxes anymore or NAS devices in your environment, guess what? It's probably that policy preventing you from doing that. So to find out, simply disable the step in the sequence and try again the new deployment to see if it works. Then you know it's that setting and then life is good.
Instead of disabling, which you can do, there
for
is...
For troubleshooting purposes, sir.
Yes, but there is a setting that you can have in the custom settings.ini that you can see here called apply GPO pack equals no, which means that you can have for certain... You have it, right? But for certain machines you don't want to have it, then you can turn it on and off depending on conditions and rules, and you can do the same. You can have different GPO packages with different name and say, well, if this is the MAC address, then we should use this lockdown policy, and if that is the machine name, computer name, location, we should have that instead. So it's extremely flexible. It's not just about applying. It's just all the other settings we have, which is nice.
All right. Back to questions. It's same machine, but other
window. Yeah. I'm flipping.
That is local group policies. Apply group policy packs are local policies only. Ah, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Now I get the comment. How can we export existing settings from a machine? There is an MSI you can download and install that is part of the compliance manager. If you want to extract, if you have a machine that is top-notch perfect already, you can extract the content, and then you can create the same type of package. So, excellent catch. Good. All right.
Oh, God. Encrypt content on USB for media deployment.
Basically, that's sort of a no, as far as I know. What Windows 8 brings to the picture is, of course, if you have software assurance, then you can use Windows 8 to go, and that is... possible to BitLocker encrypt that one. So that key is fully, you know, encrypted and you boot on it. And now you have running Windows on the machine, totally encrypted. And that could also have a ready-made deployment share on it. So when Windows boots, it's copied that deployment share to the C drive, kick off the setup, and it will run from the local drive. So now that could be a way to have that media encrypted. I mean, I know that you were working with sort of military customers. You can't really send an unencrypted key over the mail. They will freak out. So that's the only way I can figure out.
I've got two vendors that are saying they would start working with me on it, just in case there's a lot of everything is military, DOD, federal government for me. So.
Yeah, exactly. I would think we'll have to go through a third party to get that feature, because I don't know any way with the built-in tools in Windows to have MDT generate an encrypted media item unless you go through the Windows 8 to go route.
And even if you go through the Windows 8, there will be one problem, because they are, since you're booting on the USB, that's going to be one drive, and the other drive is actually hidden.
That's just the policy.
So you need to modify the policy so you can actually see the real hard drive behind it. Otherwise, it doesn't show up.
Can I create a USB on a Windows 8 machine after a Windows 7 deployment on it?
Oh, yes. You can create a Windows 7 deployment and put it on a Windows 8 DVD, USB Windows to go.
I guess the only problem that we will have is licensing, who's licensing for that Windows 8 and all that stuff. But from a technical perspective, it should be absolutely possible to do it that way. If that is not the correct way, my best guess is that the Microsoft official way will be, don't store any secrets on that media because we cannot protect it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
I understand the need for having that content protected, but right now Microsoft doesn't really have, for what we know, a good way to provide that. All right, we still have 12 minutes left. I think that's a new record.
Yes. We could sing and dance. In that case, you will most likely leave the room very fast, but Bill has a question.
Yeah, I would leave the room. So the question is, how can we find problematic drivers? In this case, it was the BlackBerry. The obvious solution would be stop using BlackBerries, but
working really hard.
It's a generic. Yes, it's a generic problem. You will find it on many types of hardware devices out there that you simply cannot find an extracted driver from the vendor. So one way or another, you need to find it yourself. And one way is, as you said, you install the vendor application on a machine already, get the driver, and they are often available in, for example, a program files folder. You can get sometimes from the file repository if it doesn't install any other applications that it requires. If you just open the file repository, and can you open the file repository, sir?
The file repository? From where?
Driver store file repository.
You mean on my C drive, on
yes,
my
sir.
Machine?
Yes. I was hoping you would have at least one third-party driver in there. System 32, thank you. You had it there.
Where?
System 32.
Ah, there it is.
Driver store.
There it is.
Repository. Sort by date.
Date?
Yes.
Oh, you're so...
Because when you install that driver, Windows is putting the driver in here. And as long as that driver doesn't call for a co-installer with an application like ATI with our newest free monitor driver does, you can actually steal the driver from here and use it. And I know that you have been using that too with great success. So for most drivers, that will work perfectly. Then there are like a bunch of vendors that provides Driver Genius, Driver Grabbers, and all other stuff. Yeah, or you go into that folder and copy the stuff. That works too.
So if it does require other files, easiest way is to go to the driver where I just were and open up the INF file. And that INF file will also tell you that we need the following files. Find the following files, put them in the same folder. That's basically reverse engineering. You can do it in another way too, and that is to pick up the device manager.
There is a copy file section that will give you a list of the files that a driver needs. And as long as you have them, life is good.
So if we go into the device manager and pick up the display properties, this driver is going to tell me.
You need to click driver details, sir.
Oh, there, sorry. Driver.
Driver details.
Driver details.
Do I have to teach you everything?
Then we need to go. Here's all the all the drivers we have. So you can just find these drivers, because this is what I used to do before. You find, that's the installer, here's the driver. You find that driver, and then you search for an INF file that contains that name. When you open that INF file, that will contain the rest of the file. And that is how the reverse driver grabber tool works. They find what driver you have, they find the name of the driver, they search for the INF file for that name, open up that INF file, process it, finds the rest of the driver.
But here's an example.
Basic, simple E2. It's very simple.
Here's an example. Don't touch. Here's an example of a driver where copying the stuff from the file repository wouldn't do all the trick for you, because as you can see, it's also having content elsewhere. So in this case, we'll have to go to program files and find stuff as well. But that's a shorthand answer.
And another way is actually to, if you do have an application, it needs to be installed as an application. Yeah, and you do install it as an application. Well, it's kind of simple to just go to the program files and then you find it, and from time to time, it actually contains the application and drivers. In this case, this is the installer, and let's see if there is a driver folder for this one. No, this is not the one. I've been doing that for HP tools, like the, I don't know.
Quick launch buttons?
Yeah, quick launch buttons. Just install it, go to program files, find quick launch buttons, take the program file, import it in LightTouch or in Configuration Manager, and hey, there goes your drivers. So you need to have a machine where you can install everything on and revert it back. So it's kind of tricky sometimes, but that's the way we do it.
And we also have the story, there are applications you simply need to install. Sorry, there are drivers that requires applications that needs to be installed as applications, period. Otherwise, the device doesn't work. HP hotkeys is a good example. The quick launch buttons is another example, a previous version of it. And as I mentioned, some of the newer ATI graphics cards, or AMD now, requires the actual application. And that needs to be deployed by the sequence as an app. It will reinstall the same driver one more time, but it will also install the app and the services that the driver requires for you to configure it. So, all right. 6 minutes. More questions. Yes, sir.
Just your comments on how people in general provision static IP.
So the question is, how can we assign static IP addresses for servers? If you have three servers, go ahead and use what Michael did. Have them in your .ini file, have the MAC address, and set the IP address there. If you have 300, using a single text file is in general a bad idea, even though it, of course, technically works. I would rather use the database for that, because the MDT database works for both LightTouch and for Config Manager, and it has, by default, ready-made fields for the first IP address. If you need to assign multiple IP addresses, you need to add additional fields into the database, but that's something you can do. And you also need to modify the CDI gather XML file, because by default it doesn't allow you to have a bunch of different IP addresses.
For a customer, we did it recently, we didn't use that approach. We shifted into using DHCP. Because in Server 2012, we have a redundant DHCP server, which will replicate both databases and leases. And then we use a PowerShell commandlet to create the reservation.
Use a static mapping.
Yeah, we use static mapping instead. And if you take it one step further, in Server 2012, you want to have the IPAM, which is the IP address management. So we used to have static IP addresses only configured locally on the machines, but we can see a trend in moving to maybe we should have it centralized instead. The beauty of having it on a DHCP server is that it is static, and it doesn't depend on what operating system you're running anymore. The machine itself will have the same thing. So in our lab, for instance, we are running both Server 2008 R2, we're running Windows 7, we're running the Server 2012, we're running all kinds of different operating systems. So instead of configuring each and every machine and depending on the deployment system, these machines have fixed IP addresses using the DHCP, but we would like to have it to be redundant. So there is a way of shifting over to using external databases instead.
Did you have any security issues
Nope. If IP addresses is a part of security, you should start thinking about security in other ways. An IP address is not a security boundary. I know that there are consultants, and very old consultants mainly, that thinks that, you know, with a static IP address, we're going to solve some security issues. You don't. It's just very hard to maintain static IP addresses on each and every machine. So security has nothing to do with IP addresses. Yes.
But Microsoft is a big. Michael is a big guy, so.
I'm very good at convincing people. No, it was very hard to do that. They didn't believe it in it at first, but I tried to convince them that we are moving into the 20th century, and that technology you're using today is steam powered, and we don't do that anymore. We stopped doing steam powered engines.
All right. I think we had a question over there in the back. Yeah, that's you, sir.
Question on with advent of Windows 8 and support of wireless. What about being able to do deployments over wireless? Be able to deploy to your tablet.
I need to answer this one. I'm sorry.
Deploying the operating system wireless.
The question is how can I deploy over wireless? The WinP team that develops WinP came to me 2 years ago and said we are going to do wireless. And I said, no, that's a really bad idea. Wireless is not built for deploying 5 gig images to many machines. And they go, no, we will fix it. All right, I'll give you a deal. I will come to Seattle. I will take the entire team out for a nice steak at the Metropolitan Downtown Grill, and that's a nice restaurant in Seattle, if you get this to work. I did not have to buy them that dinner. Nope. What you can do, the only solution I've seen that works well, it's refreshes. When you have a running OS on the machine already, use bits to trickle down the content to the machine. Use Config Manager client to get content, which is using bits. But bits normally with light touch you can trickle down as well. There are PowerShell scripts and VB scripts that will help you download the deploy share, the deploy media to the drive over wireless. And then you kick off the deployment locally. And then life is good. And that's what Config Manager does too. So for refreshes where you have a running OS, great. When you need to start the bare metal, no. Pixie, no. You need to start from a media one way or another. So that's it.
I used another wording when they asked the same question. I was more, what the something.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, our time is up. Please remember to fill in the evals. Have a great tech ed, and thank you.
Thank you.